Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Everyone Talks to Liz, affectionately known as Ethel. You know, everyone talks to Liz. Yeah, you can hear my guests cracking up. Can I start with some gratitude for you guys who listen and are part of the Ethel Army, as I like to call you? I can't see you, but I feel you. And I envision you when I bring these stories to you of people who have jumped into the arena, slayed the dragons, and fought their way to success. You know, I do sometimes think gratitude is a totally overused word, but it actually isn't if you use it to pull yourself out of the self-pity abyss. Come on, we've all been there, right? We're all feeling sorry for ourselves at some point. I don't know about you guys, but when I do start to feel sorry for myself and when something happens to me that I think is bad, I focus on a form of gratitude that actually involves thinking about those who have endured way more trouble than I ever have, and turn those stumbling blocks into stepping stones. My guest today puts just about all of us self-pitying folks to shame. He grew up in Texas, Beaumont, Texas, tiny town. His dad ditched the family to play pro basketball in New Zealand, never to show his face again. So it was really just him and his mama against the world. But when he was just 5 years old, his beloved mom was shot and killed. He was left to struggle through the grief and was raised by his grandparents, who poured all of their love and what little money they had into making sure he grew up a centered and focused child. Now, much as he excelled at basketball, there was barely any money to buy new basketball shoes because he outgrew every pair shortly after his grandparents bought them. Nevertheless, he became a star player, and in eighth grade, he was ranked nationally number three behind number two, Chris Paul. We all know him, he's famous, and number one, LeBron James. They were all eighth graders, but poverty chased him. In 2003, at 18 years old, he could not afford college, and so driven by his desire to provide for his grandparents, if that tells you anything about his heart, which is so big, Kendrick Perkins went straight to the NBA draft. He went 27th in the first round and was drafted by the Memphis Grizzlies, was then traded to the Boston Celtics, where he spent eight seasons with the team, won a championship, and yes, fulfilled his childhood promise to provide for his grandparents. So how does a little boy from Beaumont, Texas, end up in the NBA with an outstanding career and then become an ESPN sports analyst and now launches a new investment platform that capitalizes on the money student athletes can now make through endorsement deals? Because he never had that opportunity. We welcome Kendrick Perkins to Everyone Talks to Liz. Kendrick, thank you for being here.
Liz, I must say, that was, I want to start that over and let you do that intro all the way over again. That was the best intro ever.
Really?
I loved it. Yeah, I love it.
Thank you.
I'm a big fan of your work and
thank
what you do. And I love how I say stand on business, because that's what you do.
Thank you. You stand on
business, and I love it.
I do
authentic.
Not. I don't get involved in the angst or the anger of politics or none of that personality-driven nonsense. We're about business, but also on this podcast about the human focus and aspiration and inspiration that listeners can get from people like you.
Mm-hmm.
And what a story. You know, I thought to myself, and by the way, my producer, Bailey Rabinowitz, and I were talking about you, and it's like amazing, incredible story of climbing back through multiple burning hoops, none the least of which was your mom, your best friend, being killed when you were five.
Yes, by her best friend. you know, my mom worked in a beauty shop. And she did hair. She was a beautician. And the lady by the name of Sevilla, that was her name, she would come in and she, you know, was one of the people that stole clothes, like out of Dillard's or JCPenney's, and she would sell them, right? Mm-hmm. And she kept coming up to my mom's job. Well, the owner, Mr. Perry, that owned the shop, the beauty shop that my mom worked at, you know, he said to he didn't want that type of activity going on. So my mom had already told her numerous of times not to come up there with that, you know, with her scam or whatever you want to call it. And so she came up there. They got into a verbal altercation. And when my mom got back to her apartment, they end up getting into another verbal altercation, and she ended up shooting and killing my mom. Well, not, you know, my mom went to the hospital, and about 2 weeks later, she died December the 1st, 1989. So, you know, but, you know, I think, you know, everything happens for a reason. My grandparents were great, right? I mean, my grandmother, she made $62 a week. Being a maid, my grandfather made right $300 a month cleaning up the local church as a janitor. And we lived in a home that my great-grandfather built. It was a two-bedroom home where the ceilings were like, you know, 6'2". And we just found a way. And that was my whole motivation outside of having love for the game of basketball was that I wanted to get my grandparents out of that situation.
That in and of itself is testament to the kind of person you were back then, because this was a seed that you yourself planted when you were much younger, watching your grandparents do everything they could to provide for you.
Mm-hmm.
Where does somebody at age 7, 8, 9 get that?
You know what? It took a while. And the crazy part about it is my wife always tell me, but I never see you cry. Like, she'll see, you know, we all have emotions. And I always tell her I don't have any more tears to shed. Mm. You know, it was so many nights, Liz, that I cried myself to sleep, right? Just literally crying myself to sleep that I ran out of tears. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it was, you know, not being able to afford certain things or do what other kids at school were doing, you know, having chores. You know, I always tell people, I could cook, I could catch a chicken, clean it, and have it ready to, for you to cook in 30 minutes.
Seriously?
Yeah, we had like literally 150 chickens and ducks on our yard. So, I mean, that was my chores around the house. I mean, literally, we ate chicken Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and on Sunday, I'll be lucky to get some pork chops, right? But, I mean, it was just, but that's who made me into what I am today. Like, you know, my grandfather passed away about 8 years ago. He was the best man in my wedding. My grandmother is still living, but she's, you know, 89 now, you know, going through that phase of, you know, she's being sick and she's calling, and she's lived a great life. She's calling on my grandfather saying how much she miss him. And, you know, you get to that point of you watching, but I think that's what made me a strong individual.
You were eighth grade.
I was eighth grade when I first went to Las Vegas.
And how tall were you?
I was 6'6 in the eighth grade.
Oh, my. Now, your mom was tall.
My mom was 6'3".
And your dad?
He's 6'7".
Wow.
Yep. So my dad actually stays in New Zealand.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to your childhood. So your grandparents are so supportive, they find a way to let you go to Las Vegas and the AAU tournament where you get to actually play in front of college coaches.
Yes, it was the start. It was actually, that was the start of, I would say, the resurrection of Kendrick Perkins, the basketball player.
Huh.
Right? Because no one was coming down to Beaumont, Texas. Okay? And so I get a call from Hal Pastner from the Houston Hoops. His son, Josh Pastner, was just a former coach at Georgia Tech. And I literally had to get a ride to Houston because it's an hour and 45 minutes away from Beaumont. And I said, Perk, we want you to play on our team. And I said,
well, how'd they hear about you?
Well, I mean, word must have traveled that, hey, we got this 6'6", 6'7", 8 grader that's dunking. And, you know, he's dominating down here. And you need to, you know, put your eyes on him or whatever. And then, you know, all of a sudden, they came and got me.
When was your first dunk? How old were you?
Oh, I was 13 in the seventh grade.
Oh, my.
My first dunk in a basketball game, seventh grade. I was 13 years old.
What was that like?
It was everything. I mean, I swung on the rim. I made the A grade team as a seventh grader. So it was everything. It was everything. Coach McAleer, who was actually my social studies teacher, was the high school coach. I mean, my middle school coach. I love Coach McAleer, great guy. But yeah, that was my first though.
Oh my! So you go to Houston. They say, yeah, you deserve to go to Vegas. And how do you get to Vegas? And doesn't that cost money?
It does. So thank God that Hal Pastor and the Houston Hoops actually paid for my hotel and flight, right? But we out there for like 4 or 5 days. And I'm like, I never been to Vegas. So I'm like, oh, $20 at the time. We're talking about, what is this, probably 1997, 98, right?
Right.
And so, about 1999. So, you know, $20 and a roll of pennies. I'm like, how am I supposed to make
this? Wait, I'm sorry. That's all you took?
That's all I had.
$20 and a roll of pennies.
Yeah, $20 and a roll of pennies. That's all I had.
How did you handle that?
Well, so I knew I couldn't do nothing, right? I couldn't gamble. And
too young anyway.
Yeah, right. So Vegas wasn't just like, so I would just have to survive. And what I mean survive is, you know, the Houston Hoops, they would feed us,
okay,
you know, 3 times a day, right? So make sure that I ate. They made sure that we had water and Gatorades in our room. You know, if anything for us wanting additional snacks, I mean, I couldn't do that. So, I mean, you know, but my main focus was I was there to play basketball. And the good thing about it is that I didn't have that much spare time because at that point you were playing 4 or 5 games a day.
Whoa.
Yeah, so you didn't have time to really have time to spend money or, you know, even think about spending money. So, you know, a lot of the times, you know, we leaned on each other because you got to remember it's a group of 9 players. Only 2 parents out of the 9 players are on the trip. The other 9 players, the other 7 are just like myself, right?
Couldn't afford it.
Couldn't afford it. So we all just kind of adapted and made it work.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/claimin. Just go to Indeed.com/claimin right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/claimin. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So you meet kids from other teams, and that's where LeBron came in. And what was it like for you to reach that status out of Little Beaumont, Texas, and somebody tells you you're ranked number 3?
It was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. But, you know, one of my best friends, to be honest, he's the assistant coach at University of Texas, Brandon Chappelle. And he always said, Perk, you always used to carry yourself as if you knew you was going to the NBA. And I said, well, what you mean by that? And he was just like, your work ethic and your demeanor, like you had the mind that you were going. But at that time, we didn't have social media. Right, we didn't have, We didn't have access to the internet like that. Like, we couldn't pick up a phone and do it, right? Pick up a phone or whatever you had. I think at that time, we probably had beepers and pagers,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they were big. They were like the size of a chocolate bar.
So I would actually ride my bike about 2 miles to a library, and I would go get on the computer and check the rankings. They had a ranking site. I would go check and see my name on it. I would do that every day.
And yet, you also were living the life of a church boy as well. You mm-hmm. were an altar boy.
The world's tallest. The world's tallest.
The world's tallest.
Yeah, the world's tallest.
How'd they find something to fit you?
Right. I had a custom robe that was made, and I was an altar boy from eighth grade all the way through my senior year.
Do you think that's what kept you centered in a way that you didn't get your head all crazy of, I'm so great? You know, because when you're a teenager, you can start, well, as we say, believe your own press.
Right. Well, my grandparents didn't allow me to do that. You know, and I think it was just, they didn't spoil me. It wasn't that I was, you know, when I started to develop a name for myself, it wasn't like, oh, we're going to get you this or we're going to go find it. No, it wasn't that. It was still, you still have these chores around the house. Mm-hmm. We still need you to do this. You're still going to go fishing with us when we go fishing. Like, and it was just, I think it was just more so them keeping me involved in church. You know, I had to go to church on Sunday. I had to go to church on Saturday. I had to go to church on Wednesday. I had to go to church sometimes on Tuesday, depending on what was needed. You know, if I had to go and be the altar boy, if nobody would show up, my grandparents make sure that they would tell the priests and the nuns that Kendrick would be there.
Aww.
And I think, you know, I actually went to a Catholic school. So I went to a Catholic school. When my mom passed away, my grandparents didn't know which direction they wanted to, you know, for a schooling. So our Mother Mercy actually let me go to school tuition free.
But then you hit senior year of high school,
mm-hmm.
and that's when kids are applying to college.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't going to be you.
It wasn't. It wasn't. And I never had intentions on going to college. And once I saw my name on a mock draft, I knew I just had to get through my senior year. If I could have had the opportunity to do what kids are doing today and reclass up, I would have did it just to hurry up.
Meaning they can now cash in on their NIL or name, image, and likeness. But that was way before
mm-hmm.
NIL. And so it feels like we're not driven so much by I want to be an NBA star as you were by something greater than that. Something perhaps more important than that, and that was to take care of your grandparents.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was the drive that I had. You know, the workouts that I had to do before a draft, no matter how tough they got, I always remember why I was doing who I was doing it for. I was doing it for them. And when I got my first NBA check, I bought them a house and I bought them 2 cars. My grandfather a truck and my grandmother a car.
Oh my gosh.
That was it. And I felt relieved. I felt fulfilled. Everything after that didn't even matter to me no more. Right? I didn't care. I didn't buy my first house until like 9 years later.
So you bought for your grandparents and not for yourself. This is such an incredible story because people think way too much about themselves first.
All the time. All the time.
And that just wasn't you.
But so, Liz, that's the world we live in.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I don't like it.
I think social media is a negative force.
It is. If you know, if social media was taken away for 3 months, I don't know if a lot of people would be able to survive. And that's a crazy thing
to
say.
Or they would start thinking better about themselves and not less than. Because mm-hmm. I remember meeting Mike Novogratz, who is now a Bitcoin billionaire.
Mm-hmm.
His dad was in the military. They had 7 kids. He had 6 siblings. He said, Liz, my dad never made more than $28,000 a year.
Mm.
He said, but growing up, we didn't know that we didn't have money because, well, at the time when I talked to him about this, Paris Hilton was really big in reality TV. And he said, we didn't have Paris Hilton and her fabulous life shoved in our faces. We had great evenings where the sun would go down and we were playing kickball in the street and we had love. We had enough food to feed.
Right.
He said, we just were happy. We didn't have what we didn't have shoved in our faces.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe your outcome might have been different. So you get drafted by the Grizzlies, but then you immediately get traded to the Celtics, right?
Right.
Boston, what a difference from Beaumont, Texas.
What a culture change.
Oh, my God. I've lived in Boston. I did news at Channel 7.
So
And I'm a Californian. Going there was like going to the Arctic.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about the weather.
Yeah.
The people are definitely different.
They are. But I will say this. It took me a while, because you got to realize, I went from eating gumbo to eating clam chowder, right? So the whole diet had to adjust, right? I'm going from eating shrimp po' boys to lobster rolls. So the thing when I found out about Boston, and, you know, I say this all the time, you know, even when I'm talking to groups of kids and people who ask me about my 8.5 years in Boston, and they asked me, they was like, is it racist out there? And I'm like, first of all, it's racism everywhere. Okay, that's number one. Number two, I never experienced racism. I experienced a culture change. So when I say a culture change is in Beaumont, Texas, you could be walking in a gas station, right, a random convenience store, grocery store, and you could pass by a complete stranger, and you're going to speak. No matter what the race is, right? You're going to speak, hey, how you doing? Like, you don't even have to.
Oh, man, you are so right. Bostonians do not even look at you.
Don't even look at you. But they're in their own lane. It's not about racism. So you have to adjust, and you get into your own lane.
Yeah.
That's just the nature of what it is. And so I actually love Boston. My wife wants to move back there. I don't know if I can do it.
Where'd you live in Boston?
So I lived in Waltham.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So one of the suburbs.
Well, I had to see some type of grass. As a country boy, like I had to see some type of greenery, the trees, the grass. So.
And there's Duncan. I mean, there's that.
Right.
Man, why not? One across the street from another and then on the corner. I used to jog the Charles River.
Oh,
and in California, when you pass another runner, you at least wave.
Right.
Nobody in Boston waved or.
No.
That not happening. But listen. It is what it is. It's a different culture,
yeah,
certainly.
Yeah, that's it.
So when did you get to the point where you thought, I've reached the top? This is amazing. I mean, was it the NBA championship?
You know what? I didn't. And that's the only regret that I have, is that I didn't fully embrace winning the NBA championship.
Why not?
I don't know. Maybe I was young. Mm-hmm. And I was... I believe 2008, 2003, I'm about 24 years old, 23,
mm-hmm.
when I won it. Most of the guys on my team were 30 plus.
Sure.
And I didn't realize the moment until I look back on it now. You know, and now I look back, and this is the time I say I made it. I don't know, like... I didn't have so many cars, right? I didn't have jewelry that I don't have anymore. I didn't have, you know, earrings. I didn't have the expensive watches. And now that I have my wife, my four kids, I got peace.
Mm.
I have peace. I'm actually enjoying life. And if I can go back and change the hands of times, it was so many things that I could have done, that I would have done differently in my 20s in the way that I think now.
Like what?
You know, like I would have never bought a car.
What kind of car did you buy?
I mean, I had a Bentley. I had a Mercedes. I had an Escalade. And I would rotate them out, like, you know, with the big dumb rims and... You know, just doing things, you know, because at the time you're looking at all the the music videos that are out, and you seeing what you hearing what everybody is doing. You seeing
what's my ride.
Yeah, seeing the new, and it's just like following the wave until I finally realized after retirement, and I got into this new space of being in the media, I instantly became a leader.
Let's talk about ESPN and the media. And a lot of players, when they retire, think, oh, I could do that. It is hard. You have to be quick. You have to be very focused. You have to be original. And not everybody can do it.
And that's why why everybody don't make it, right? And so you think about it, in the media space, especially with former athletes, if you're a Hall of Famer, okay, you have the red carpet laid out for you. But I wasn't a Hall of Famer. So I had to work to get to the point where I'm at today at ESPN, right? Like, you know, one of the top guys in the NBA space, you know, going head-to-head with Stephen A. on a day-to-day basis.
Stephen A. Smith, huge star.
Yeah, and I had to work to get to that point, and I learned under his mentorship, and I was acceptance of it. And I'm going to say this. I watched so many guys that thought they could come in and actually do this, and all of a sudden, I don't see them anymore because they don't want to wake up for the production meetings. They don't want to do the prep calls.
Tell me your travel schedule.
So my travel schedule is I work from home Mondays and Tuesdays. Wednesday, I take an early morning flight out at 5 in the morning. I get to L.A. I have NBA Today. I have SportsCenter. And then I have NBA Countdown. The following morning, I have First Take, which is I have to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning, West Coast time. Then I have SportsCenter. Then I have NBA Today. Then I have the day off. And then my Friday, I come back in and I start from First Take, SportsCenter, Pat McAfee Show, NBA Today, PTI, SportsCenter again, NBA Countdown. It's a 12-hour day, but I love it. You know why I love it? I had so many regrets when I was a player, you know, that I wish in the offseason I would have took it more serious, right? Putting into my craft. And with this opportunity as me being an analyst, Liz, I didn't ask for this. This wasn't nothing that I wanted to do after basketball, right? I actually wanted to be a coach. And I started tweeting out, you know, about the playoffs one time, and I got invited to go do Undisputed with Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp during that time. And it was like, yeah, I'll come up. And I fell in love with it. And all of a sudden, this country boy from Beaumont, Texas, that speak with broken English, that bring a little charisma, that's going to bring, you know, these catchphrases, all of a sudden people started to adapt to me. And now I'm here to where I'm at now. And so I said, you know what? I'm loving what I'm doing. And my job is I don't want to have any regrets. I want to be the best at it.
It, to me, is so fascinating that as busy as you are, you now have this business that you are going full force into. You are the co-founder of Nilly, which is this really interesting platform. You know, I'm not entirely sold on it. You get to do that for me because there are a million ideas and million platforms of how to capitalize and how investors can make money. But what it really does is it gives student athletes, college athletes, this opportunity to have an organization behind their back, you know, and working with them to get endorsements, and then investors can get a piece of that in the end. What made you come up with this idea with your partner, Chris?
Well, because I'm watching so many student athletes, and I still call them children because until you're in college, you're still considered a child to me. That have to grow up and be adults. Like they have to miss their senior prom or miss senior activities or not even see their senior year because they have to go off to college at the age of 16 or 17 now to go because of their financial situation. And so when I think about that, I'm like, no, these kids need more control, right? These children, these student athletes need more control. And when I say more control, a lot of, if you, 50% of this, and I'm hypothetically speaking, but if we was to take a survey, I guarantee you 50% of the student athletes right now that are in college, you know, they're not happy where they are. They only went there because they had, because that college may have offered them the most money.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we see the transfer protocol.
Right, so they don't even go to the college protocol that they dreamed of
right.
going to.
But with this, now you can control your own destination, your own destiny, because now money is not the problem. So you didn't already took money because you already projected to make money.
Because Nilly gives them a payment up front.
Yeah.
They can choose whatever college they want, and then Nilly strikes the endorsement deals.
Yes. And then the endorsement deals pays Nilly back. You know the great thing about it, though? If the student athlete gets injured or don't get a Nilly deal, guess what?
They still get the money?
They don't have to pay it back.
Ah.
So they don't have to pay it back. So this is not your typical student loan. This is not going to go on your credit. If you don't get your Nilly deal, you projected, you don't have to pay it back.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back. I know some people really hate name, image, and likeness because they think it ruins college sports and it debases it with money. But I can tell you, and I was never a college athlete. I was the editor of the yearbook staff. I was taking journalism classes, but I would watch my friends because I was in a dorm at Berkeley mm-hmm. where it was co-ed and a lot of the soccer players and the crew team were on. And they were worked to the bone. They could barely have time to study.
Mm-hmm.
They were constantly working and working and working. And then, I mean, when I went, my first on-air market was in Columbus, Ohio, mm-hmm. and Robert Smith was the star player at Ohio State.
Okay.
He ended up winning the Heisman. And he could barely have a second to sleep or eat. They were working him so hard, and Ohio State was making millions of mm-hmm. dollars. But the kids weren't making any of that. They didn't get a piece of it. He wanted to be a doctor. That was his goal. He ended up being a doctor. But he was a little resentful of how much money they made off him. And he didn't have time to do his studies appropriately. He did figure out a way because he's so dang smart. But I'm all for Nil. I think it's great, except I do think that you have to be careful with it because these kids are ending up going, oh, well, let me go to this school I didn't want to go to because the BMW dealership is going to give me
exactly,
a great deal.
Exactly. And that's the problem. And that's why every single offseason in any sport, you see so many kids transferring because they didn't want to go there in the first place. But because when they got recruited, the money situation was so beneficial for them and it was needed that they chose that route. You want a kid to be able to choose his route. These kids nowadays, these student athletes in high school put in so much work. They train like professionals.
Yeah.
Right? They're waking up at 5 in the morning, okay, before school, getting an hour and a half work in, going to take a shower, then they're going to class. They may have, you know, athletics where they putting in work. Then they go after school. They may have a private session of whatever they do, if they're a basketball player, an hour and a half of gym work to an hour and a half of training to the bed,
mm-hmm.
right? So they're already trained. Their mentality is already there.
Yeah, and
so
the they're exhausted. They're sometimes hurt.
Right. So I couldn't, you know, I walk into these AAU gyms, and shout out to a lot of AAU coaches. I see so many AAU coaches that are literally having 7 or 8 kids that they're funding, you know, paying out of pocket, mm-hmm. staying in Airbnbs, taking 12, 16-hour bus rides, van rides to get these kids to make sure that they're getting the right exposure. And parents are being left behind because mom has to or dad has to work a 12-hour shift.
Sure.
right? To make sure that the lights are still on.
Kendrick, as we finish up, I'm thinking about your four beautiful children. They are being raised in a totally different atmosphere than you were. Okay? You were 6 foot 10 and your ceilings were 6 foot two.
Right.
Tiny little house.
Right.
You didn't have basketball shoes. How do you keep your kids grounded when they are surrounded by the wealth that you were able to glean and to get?
You know, the great thing about it is that my wife and I have been together since the 10th grade. And she does a tremendous job. And I supply needs, not wants. Okay. And if you want something, you got to earn it. I'm going to give you a quick story on what I did with my oldest child. Okay. My oldest child, firstborn, my wife and I had him when we were in Boston. He was 1 year old when I won the NBA championship. And he somewhat was on the spoiled side, and I could see it happening, right? And I told my wife, I said, when he got into the seventh grade, I said, I'm about to start, like, breaking him out of this sense of entitlement. Meaning that just because a new pair of shoes come out doesn't mean that you're supposed to get them, right? So I'm about to, one, make you start appreciating stuff a little bit more. Two, I'm also about to have you start cutting our grass, right? Cutting the yard.
How'd that go over?
It started off rough, but, I mean, it was a transition. So, you know, the school, the area, we stay in the Woodlands, Texas, okay? And a very nice, you know, community, safe living. And the school that he go to, you know, everybody, you know, family is wealthy. You know, some people, you know, a lot of people have more money than, you know, me and his mom do. And I started to see just this pattern that I wasn't really feeling. And so what I did was I said, you know what? Your freshman year, me and your mother are going to make the sacrifice, and we're going to drive you 30 minutes away to this other public school, right? Hmm. That has a mixed culture, whether it's whites, blacks, Hispanics, it's all the above. But you may walk in the bathroom and you may see a fight, right? But this is real life. And the reason I wanted to make him uncomfortable is because I want my sons and my daughter to be a leader. So I want to know when they leave the house that they could go anywhere in the world and be able to adapt. And the only way you know how to adapt is by being a leader, not a follower. Mm. And it, you know what? Over this last year, I can't say how proud I am of him enough. Of the transition of me watching him become a young man.
Mm.
It's like, Dad, what's going on? You know, voice changing, the body changing. It's like, Dad, I'm going to the weight room. It's just, it's a whole different, like vibe. And I was like, yes. Like,
hey, he understands you have to work for
things. Yeah, this is what I've been wanting. And it's like the little things, because now, you know, it's no dress code at the school. So now these kids get to go to school with Crocs on and slippers and comfortable. They get to have their cell phones. And I'm starting to see him gradually, like, go towards what matters the most. And I can't thank my wife enough because she makes sure that she keep them grounded. They have chores. They room. Like, they have to wake up. Bed have to be made. Before you go to school, room have to be clean. You wash your own clothes. My 12-year-old and my 16-year-old, they wash their own clothes. It's real chores, and you got to keep them that way.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'll step into the real world and be lost.
Well, my kids grew up in a very privileged school, and I remember thinking to myself, I mean, some of their friends were flying private jet to Malaysia for Christmas vacation and the Maldives. And I remember my kids were asking for certain things, and I could have afforded it, but I said, you know what, guys, here's what I can promise you. Like the Rolling Stones song, You can't always get what you want, but I promise you, you will always get what you need from us. That's love, support, guidance. We will stand up for you. We will get you tutors if you need it. We will get what matters, the help that matters. But you won't always get what you want. So I liked what you said where you said you don't get, it's wants versus need.
Yeah. Let me make you laugh. So yesterday, last night, I was shooting a video at home for the launch of Nilly. And I had a snapback cap on with my hoodie with my Nilly. And I'm doing the video, right? So my 16-year-old comes downstairs. He like, Dad, what? When he joke, when he plays, when he like wants something, he play with me like Big Perk, you know,
Big Perk.
He slide that in, right? So I'm like, what's up? He like, man, what my Nilly gear at? I said, why would you want Nilly gear? I said, you wouldn't want to advance from Nilly? Why wouldn't you want to go work hard? Because you are a basketball player and you could qualify for advance to get a head start in life, because if maybe, hey, you become a 5-star recruit by your junior year, maybe Nilly can advance you $500 to $1 million. Do you know what you could do with that and have a head start in life while you worrying about a cap and a hoodie? And he said, I ain't think about that. I said, I know you didn't. That's why I'm your dad.
Oh, man. They are lucky to have you and your lovely wife. I can't thank you enough for such an enriched story. Let me do that again. I cannot thank you enough for such a rich and valuable story coming from the background that you had and making yourself into what you are today. And you have just not stopped working and slaying the dragons. Kendrick, thank you.
Thank you, Liz, and thank you for having me. Thank you for allowing Nilly to be on your platform, and thank you for all you do and keep setting the example for all, not just media members, but the women, especially around the world. Because people don't realize and I was telling my wife this because we was actually watching the rest of the show when we were sitting in the green room, and I said, Liz is great. I said, you have to be strong. You have to be thick-skinned. I said, and the way that she addresses this, I said, you could tell she is really prepared.
Oh,
it was great.
Well, I draw upon stories like yours. Thank you so much, Kendrick.
Thank you.
And to all of you listening, now I know this one will sit with you a long time. Spread the word. Tell your friends, tell people who matter to you that they really should listen to this. It will make them better people and, in a way, more ambitious and successful, because they realize that, like Kendrick, you have to fight a lot of dragons and slay them if you are reaching for success. Thanks again so much. I'll see you Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, on the Claiming Countdown. Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.